You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we always let the Wookiee win. I'm your host, Justin Amosneski, and obviously, RIP, Peter Mayhew. I won't say RIP Chewbacca because I'm sure they'll just find somebody else to play him. I mean, that's what they do in this day and age. But May the 4th and Peter Mayhew dies. That's pretty crazy. I think he may have died the day before. I'm sure Daniel will give us the full update in 2 seconds here. But that's pretty crazy for Star Wars fans out there. So sorry your celebratory weekend was dampened a little bit. I'm sorry to hear that. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Yeah, it was a more somber May 4th than most, but he actually, I believe he died on April 30th, and his family released the news later, but it's unclear.
So did the family just want to fuck with May the 4th? Is that what happened?
I guess so. I'm sure Chewbacca gear and toy sales skyrocketed, in fact. So I'm sure his family is getting some royalty for that. Not that they, I'm not making a correlation. I'm saying that you know, things will be paid for. It's fine.
But I have a question though, Daniel. Is he the guy who played Chewbacca in the Han Solo movie in episodes 7 and 8 and in episode 9?
No. He may have played it in The Force Awakens, maybe. But there's another guy named, I believe his name is Jan. Although I don't know his full name, and that may not be his first name, but it's something like that. He's Scandinavian of some sort. He's a very tall, blonde guy who's playing him now. But Peter Mayhew was on set the whole time to consult on Wookiee-ness. So the crazy thing is that Peter Mayhew was just at and heavily participated in the most recent Star Wars celebration in Chicago, which was in early April. So he was active all the way out. Died at the age of 74 and was, in fact, 7'4".
I mean, isn't that, in a way, a good thing? That he was healthy all the way till the last moments of his life and it just sort of took him suddenly?
Yeah, certainly better than some of the alternatives there. And as for a tall man, for a 7'4" man, 74 is very old. Tall people do not live as long as the rest of us.
That is statistically proven. That is one thing I held on to when I was a kid, was that short people live longer. It's because our hearts don't work as hard.
That's right.
Especially Justin's.
Because he doesn't have one.
Yeah.
Like the Grinch.
That's right.
Yeah. But something else of mine grows through sizes.
Oh, God. Who was talking just now?
Also joining us.
Oh.
From Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, I went to the Long Beach Pops concert last night, and they were doing Heroes and Villains, and they had a lot of Star Wars music in. A subtle nod at one point in the program to Chewbacca, but this is a charity fundraiser for one of their programs where they bring music to the high schools in Wilmington and Long Beach, and so no big mention of it, but it was nice to hear some Star Wars music played live by a full orchestra, so that was a lot of fun.
Always a cool experience. That music is meant to be listened to live. I say that obviously in joke because it's meant to be played for a movie, but honestly it plays very well live, and I've seen it many times live, and in fact I've seen live scorings of the movie done, which is also a very cool experience to be watching the movie and have the orchestra doing the soundtrack live. It's awesome.
Wow. Yeah,
if you ever get a chance, you should do that.
I'll put that
on that's
list.
Cool. That's cool. Cool. You know, this is
like
the
Zack
most
Snyder.
Not even close to the same thing. But, you know, this is the most I've ever talked about Chewbacca in my entire life.
I imagine it is, yes. You being not a huge fan of the original Star Wars trilogy. But come on, you got to give props to the character of Chewbacca, who doesn't say anything yet manages to communicate so much and has managed to be beloved across the world.
I mean, that's the perfect man nowadays, isn't it?
Do nothing but grunt and then be beloved around the world?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But sure. It's appropriate we talk this much about Chewbacca because this is a very movie-centric, movie-heavy episode of The Midside. A lot of movie news this week. Let's get into it in the news with Daniel Tiemann.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad.
So, Midsiders out there, thank you so much for being Patreon subscribers. That's patreon.com/themidside, where you can give us a couple bucks every time we produce one of these things, and it helps us keep the lights on. So, thanks. A Domino's employee was charged this week with attacking a coworker over Avengers spoilers. Indeed, an employee at a McDonald's in Texas attacked a coworker for dishing an Avengers Endgame spoiler. Police were called to the Friendswood restaurant early Sunday for a report of an assault. Justin Surface, 33, was slapped with a citation for assault by contact after cops say he went after his coworker for revealing what happens in Marvel's blockbuster superhero flick, which was released in the U.S. this past few weeks or so. I don't know. That's hilarious, one Domino's customer told ABC 13 in commenting on the reason for the attack. That just seems kind of insane to me. Last week, though, a man was beaten outside of a Hong Kong cinema after he shouted out spoilers to Avengers fans waiting in line to see the movie. And I don't believe any of them were prosecuted. In an online open letter, the film's directors, brothers Anthony and Joseph Russo, pleaded with fans to not share major plot points with one another. Saying, quote, because so many of you have invested your time, your hearts, your souls into these stories, we're once again asking for your help. When you see the endgame in the coming weeks, please don't spoil it for others the same way you wouldn't want it spoiled for you. Justin, did you plant this article here simply so that I wouldn't spoil Endgame for you in this episode?
No, I didn't know you had seen it or you were intending on spoiling it. Have you seen it?
I saw it yesterday, yes.
Okay, well, I am seeing it next Saturday. So, yes, please don't spoil it. But that's, you know, that's an interesting question you raise, and I want to talk about that. But first, I want to talk about one funny point to me about the way the law works. Cited for assault by contact? Is there assault by non-contact citations as well?
Well, you could throw a rock at someone.
So it's a form of contact, isn't it?
That's what I was going to say. So contact means physical skin-to-skin contact.
I suspect this was something like he...
Didn't slap him with a slice of pizza.
Or, yeah. Like, hit him with a pizza box on the top of the head or something like that. Because he was cited. Like, he wasn't even arrested.
Right, and that's funny to me. Like, I picture the guy like... I know one thing, I'm not going to say it, but it says, like, blah, 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 and the guy smacks him in the face with a slice of pizza. Like, that's funny to me. That's funny.
That's right. But Captain America whips out his junk, and then he slaps him in the face with a piece of pizza.
Yeah, that's funny. Mm-hmm. I can see that. But look, there is a greater cultural thing. There's two things here. This is one of those stories that I am exactly in the middle on, right? Because... Dude, don't slap someone with a slice of pizza because they spoil the movie for you. Like, just non-initiation of force, right? Like, don't beat somebody up over this. But on the other hand...
Spoiler, an initiation of force. Just kidding. Okay.
Well, no, that's actually... I'm not going to say that exactly, but this is... That's the other side of the equation here. That's the other side of this relationship. This story is... It has become a meme... Since, remember, Snape Kills Dumbledore was a meme?
Yes.
Yeah, where people, there was the famous one I remember was outside the bookstore. Somebody drove by and went, Snape Kills Dumbledore, and somebody yells, no, you bitch! And since then, people have taken to spoiling things in random places just to piss people off. For instance, post-draft, I was reading the Patriots subreddit, and at the one of the threads, one of the top comments was Avengers Endgame spoiler below. Do not scroll down. Why are you putting Avengers Endgame spoilers in a Patriots thread? It's not even relevant. The people there might not even watch the Marvel movies. But because people want to feel like they're important or they're being impactful in people's lives or something, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. It's become a meme. So on one hand, I appreciate that it's sort of become a meme, like don't spoil Endgame has sort of become a meme now, which I like that we're sort of going in the other direction. And I kind of, and maybe this is just my Boston-ness, where it's like some people just need to be punched in the face with a slice of pizza from Papa Gino's. Just everybody every once in a while just with Papa Gino's. I'm okay with this. I don't think I should be okay. I think it probably violates what I believe, but fucking dude, why are you spoiling it for the people you're working with? Why are you just randomly talking about what happens in Endgame? Like, you deserve to get slapped with a slice of pizza. Maybe from CeCe's, because nobody should be eating CeCe's pizza buffet. Maybe that's the best use for CeCe's pizza buffet. I mean, actually, eat Papa Gino's. Eat it. Not the best pizza, but, you know, it's a lot better than CeCe's. So maybe get slapped with a slice of pizza from CeCe's, but don't spoil this stuff anymore. Can we just stop this? You're not important. Why do you do
this? Why was it on the Patriots thread? Because, spoiler alert, Brady wields the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah. Everyone saw that Bleacher Report short. Mm-hmm.
That's right. William, I have a more, I was going to say philosophical, and then I had to laugh at myself, abstract question for you, which is, what constitutes a spoiler?
Well, in today's movies, it's giving away a plot twist. Because every movie requires a plot twist. So,
well, because I asked because I have a coworker who shall remain nameless, except his name is Matt. And he is so hardcore about what he considers to be a spoiler that he won't let me, like, he won't watch trailers for movies.
I have to take his side on this. When I used to watch Survivor back in the day, and, you know, Survivor's big on, it's like a mystery. Oh, who wins? And you try to figure out who wins based upon the theme they're portraying and the way they're editing it. I would not watch the next episode because I considered them spoilers. Also because it tainted your view of the story because you're getting some of the information beforehand so you can't enjoy the actual story because of the trailers. But I considered them spoilers because it's telling you what's happening in the episode. I would define spoilers as anything in the story. We just have an accepted level of spoilerdom now because trailers are huge spoilers. You watch them and it gives away the whole story. And it's also like William said, we consider every movie has to have a plot twist. Every movie has to have something, you know, that really gets your emotions going. So those are the only thing people really consider spoilers. But yeah, anything is a spoiler technically.
I don't know if I agree. At some point, we're not even able to communicate about these things to each other because it's so absurd about what I can say, like, about the movie. Like, if I say something that occurs in the first 9 seconds, is that a spoiler? I mean, I think
yes,
it could be depending
the first
on what
9
it is.
Seconds.
It could be, but I don't think it necessarily is. I think a spoiler is to sort of piggyback off of what William was saying. I think a spoiler means revealing an important plot twist or revealing the ending of a movie, how the resolution happens. But I don't know. I feel like we've gone too far in the direction of don't tell me anything about any art I'm ever going to encounter. And now it's difficult to talk to Matt about movies, except that he makes movies for a living and I can't talk to him about them. It's crazy.
Wait, you can't talk to him about the movies he makes because you might spoil what happens in the movies he makes before he makes them?
My point is, I can't talk. I mean, unless we've both seen movies, and he'll go so far as to be like, I don't remember seeing that, so don't re-spoil it for me.
Oh, that's dumb. If you've already seen it, then just let your memory be jogged so you can have the conversation. I mean, look, when I have conversations with people, if they haven't seen something, I always ask them, I go, do you care? And they go, no. And then I just tell them everything. It's also, look, it's also difficult for me because I don't know what other people are going to consider a spoiler or not. I mean, you know me, I pick out like random like details that seem unimportant, and I may talk about it and people would be like, I don't care, why'd you bring that up? Because they have no idea why it's significant. On the other hand, I might say something that's completely insignificant to me because I know it's really just a superfluous thing that could have even been cut, and people might get mad that that's a spoiler.
Yeah. Boy, yeah, boy, sounds like a super fun culture we live in.
Yeah, Justin, I have a question about spoilers just in general, and this might be tainted by the recent disaster that was episode 3 of the final season of Game of Thrones, but, you know, Is there an opportunity when you're a writer to use a plot twist like you use that as a crutch to actually underdevelop things? Like the thing I'm thinking about here is the reason why spoilers are such a big deal.
Wait. Are you referring to spoiler alert? Arya?
There's walkers in the barn and Laurie's pregnant.
Arya? Are you referring to Arya?
Yeah.
I swear to God, I'm the only person on the planet who was like, that's the best episode of Game of Thrones. That was legitimately my favorite episode of Game of Thrones.
Well, let me make my point, and we should review Game of Thrones when it's done. but there's some movies that, like, take The Sixth Sense, so that we're more in the realm of not spoiler.
Rosebud was a sled.
Yeah. You know, Sixth Sense, you can watch it the first time and you get a certain enjoyment with out of the twist, but then you can watch it a second time and you can see more subtle things inside of it, right? Like you see that there's more there than just a twist, right? But there's a lot of movies these days, they rely on the plot twist. That's the entertainment. And there's nothing mm-hmm. else that's there.
The Saw franchise?
Yeah. There you go. So I think that's why spoilers are such a big thing for a lot of people, right?
Oh, yeah. Especially because most people, even if the movies aren't surface level, are just watching them on the surface level. It's very much, I mean, to go back to the Survivor metaphor, you could get voted out very methodically and everyone sees it coming, or you can get blindsided where you don't see it coming. And some of the episodes with blindsides are edited so the viewer doesn't even see the person who's going to get voted out being voted out. And people are watching for that. They're just watching for the Daniel. It's emotionalism. They're watching for the emotional high of these twists, the being shocked, right? To be like, oh my God, I can't believe that character was just killed off. Oh my God, I can't believe that character was just voted off. That's what people are watching for. I mean, that's part of why The Walking Dead and Game of Thrones have become so popular, because of the random deaths of killing people. Whereas for me, and again, spoiler here, I'll take what happened to Theon over these random deaths in these shows, because I want a good arc like that. That's what I want.
What you want is an integrated plot theme, and you want certain elements to, you know, even if they're shocking, to be integrated into that. Whereas I think most plot twists nowadays, or most just twists in general, I won't even call them plot twists, are deus ex machina.
Right.
They're just out of nowhere, and it's just something incredible happens, and then people just go, oh, damn, I didn't see that coming. So, well, you can't see it coming because there's no logic to it.
Right. But that's what people want, because they want to be surprised. They want that feeling of being surprised. I mean, Daniel, this was you made a comment where you were like, oh, man, isn't this a wonderful culture we live in? Isn't this just a result slash, I mean, this is a chicken and egg thing, but it's a, you know, this is part of the cycle that feeds emotionalism. It creates emotionalism and it adds to emotionalism, perpetuates it, doesn't it?
Sure, of course. But I'm also referring to the idea that we can't know anything about anything.
Well, that, I'm saying that's part of the emotionalism. Oh, okay. I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you that it is too far, because I agree with you from a marketing standpoint and from a conversation standpoint. You need to be able to have the back of the book say what the book's about, you know? You need to be able to talk to other people and say, oh, this is what basically the story's about. I mean, I would technically call that all spoilers, but there's a line of where the spoilers are acceptable and where they're not. And to me, this is what I would say to you, Daniel, from a writer's standpoint. It's all about the exposition or not. I think it's great talk about the exposition all day. What are the basics of the story? What do you need to understand for this story? All of that. But once you start going beyond that and you start going into, let's say the inciting action is the cutoff. So you get to the inciting action, you talk about that. If you start talking about stuff beyond the inciting action, to me, that's the spoilers that really count. Because that's when the story becomes more than just trying to get people hooked, and that becomes where you're actually involved in the story. How does that sound for a delineation?
What about spoiling themes?
I don't think themes are a bad thing to spoil.
Okay.
Although, you know what? I hesitate for that. Because there are some that you want people to come to on their own. Let's take Sucker Punch, for instance. Sucker Punch is so much better if you don't know the themes and you discover them on your own. It's so powerful to watch and be like, wow, this is multi-layered. This is a commentary on, you know, how to survive psychologically, psychological strength, but it's also a commentary on the stories we write and how we write them and how we create them, and specifically female characters. So just to discover that all on your own is powerful, but also contextually at the same time, this is where my teaching experience comes in. There are some people you have to spoil it for because they're not going to get it on their own, whereas there are other people that you don't want to spoil it for them because you know they're going to get more joy out of it. So I think there's a lot of, and I think this probably is going to make Daniel very happy, I think there's a very individualized approach to who you spoil things for and who you don't and how you spoil them. The problem now is we're just all driving by Barnes & Noble yelling, Snape killed Dumbledore. We're treating everyone the same.
Wait, where's there a Barnes & Noble?
Well, when that came out.
It's true.
Can we do that to the last Barnes & Noble, like, right before it closes? Just everyone, like, in memorial, like, get the little funeral flags and everyone just drive by slowly and yell, Snape killed Dumbledore.
You know, I think that's a great idea. Yeah. I'm for that.
Very good. Daniel, speaking of funeral possessions, we should have one.
Oh, go ahead. I thought you were
transitioning now.
Oh, no, but so before you transition, is that...
Oh, jeez.
Is that what I came to as a conclusion? Is that a good... Is that a good compromise? Is that a good way to approach it?
Yes. Can I transition now?
Yes, as long as I get my props.
That's well, now that my transition doesn't work, we'll just go into Sonic the Hedgehog. The movie got such...
That still works. A funeral service backlash. For this terrible movie.
Well, it's not going to be for the movie. It's for the current design of Sonic the Hedgehog. So when the trailer dropped recently, the internet was... unified for maybe the first time in its history, Hillary supporters, Trump supporters, men, women, feminists, traditionalist conservatives all got behind the idea that the Sonic design was outright terrible. And they're going to do something about it. So Jeff Fowler, the director of the movie, tweeted this. He said, quote, "The message is loud and clear. You aren't happy with the design and you want changes. It's going to happen. Everyone at Paramount and Sega are fully committed to making this character the best he can be." So I don't. Did we review this trailer? If so, I don't remember.
I don't think so, but I didn't put it in here because we can just talk about it as part of this story.
Yes,
it's hard to talk about this without talking about the trailer.
Correct. So I watched the trailer and I had a similar reaction to all of the internet, which was, why is this character look so bad? And I had it in the context of this, which is, we have a Detective Pikachu movie coming out where they're doing a sort of quote-unquote live-action Pikachu who looks perfect within the world of what has been set up for Pokemon. So why do they have to so radically change Sonic, especially when I think the casting of Jim Carrey for Dr. Robotnik was so brilliant? Justin, did you have any similar thoughts about the trailer? Or different thoughts?
Interesting. I had a very similar thought, and this goes all the way back to the Mario Brothers movie from the 90s. You already have the character design and it already works. This isn't like a book, right? This isn't like a book where you're like, oh man, we got to figure out how to put Howard Rourke on screen. Do we dye his hair red? Do we cast a natural redhead? Like, you already have the character design. Why would you fuck with it? And that's what Pokemon has done so well in their trailers. Like, if you watch the trailer, like, the newer trailers where Mewtwo comes out, like, he fucking looks exactly like he did in the video games and the cartoon. They just, you don't fucking fuck with it. But for some reason with Sonic, they decided to fuck with it. But I had a different reaction to the trailer than you did. I thought that this whole controversy is a case of missing the forest for the trees, and they're complaining about the design of Sonic when the design of the whole movie is terrible. And I thought Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik is terrible. I don't know why you'd go with this tone for the movie. None of it was funny to me. This felt like a 90s video game adaptation, a 90s video game movie adaptation. It was like the clock had been turned backwards. First of all, make Dr. Robotnik fat. Why are you fucking with these trailers?
How dare you fat shame?
I wasn't fat shaming at all. I wanted him to be fat, in fact. This movie would be better if he were fat.
Why are you thin shaming?
Yeah, there we go. I'm thin shaming. No, and I just thought he wasn't funny. I thought him as Dr. Robotnik was very strange. It's just like, it's like if you took Dr. Wily and you made him Louis C.K. in a Mega Man movie. none of this trailer made sense to me.
Dr. Wily, why are you so fascinated with that ficus? Here's, and I'll let William respond to my response, which is, Dr. Robotnik is such an over-the-top caricature of a villain in a good way that who do you get to play him other than, say, you know, if he was alive, like Robin Williams? Like, he's so an animated version of a human being that I think someone like Jim Carrey is about as good as it's going to get. Maybe you should put him in a fat suit. Maybe they should have done that, but... I don't know. William?
I don't know either. I'm just so horrified by, much like Justin was saying, like, this seems like a 90s video game movie, at least as presented in the trailers. And I think the thing about Sonic is the whole uncanny valley, right? They tried to make it too much like a hedgehog, like a real life hedgehog, when he's a blue alien, you know? And even
is
in
he
universe,
actually an alien?
In that movie trailer, he does mention that he's from somewhere else.
So, right, but I'm saying in the Sonic the Hedgehog games, is he an alien?
Well, you would be an alien on your own planet, Justin. Is he an alien?
I don't understand himself? That answer. Is he from another planet? Is in the video games is Sonic the Hedgehog from another planet?
Well, he's no, on his own
my
planet,
point. Yeah, exactly. My point is he's on his own planet. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Where they fucked all of this up? Why would you just not fucking set the movie in Emerald City or whatever the fucking lands are? Why are you gonna put it on Earth?
Because Justin, this is a prequel.
This is a prequel.
I think this story, judging by the trailer, this is the story. The only way this works, I'm not saying that I think this is the direction to go, but the only way this would work is if this is the story of how we get Robotnik. If that's what this is, then the second movie would obviously take place in Emerald City or wherever.
That is the only way this movie could work, because otherwise, why not just start it where he's fucking racing for shit on his planet? Like, why not just start it there? Like, I don't understand. I don't understand anything about this movie. I don't understand why Dr. Robotnik is, like, some weird, like, military guy trying to, like, capture something. None of this makes any fucking sense to me. Where are the little animals Dr. Robotnik captures? None of this makes any sense to me. Where's Tails?
Where are the gold rings?
Yes!
They're around the logo. They're around the logo at the beginning. Where's
Knuckles?
Fuck this movie, okay? You fucking people out here. Look, here's the thing, okay? First of all, you're all fucking stupid, all right? You're raging, and you made this guy. This is going to become a Superman mustache issue in Justice League. It's going to look even shittier because they probably don't have enough time to fix this because you fucking people can't just admit you don't want to see the movie because it looks like shit, okay? That's the first thing. The second thing is this an issue of artistic integrity? I don't know. I don't know if a mass marketed movie can have artistic integrity, but I really wish the director would have just been like, fuck you, you 50 people on the internet. Do you think Michael Bay would have changed? Do you think Michael Bay would have changed based upon what the internet said, or would have just said, this is my Sonic, fuck you, and
then
made an explosion?
Yeah, but is this artistic? Did they really choose this to be that way, or is this just listening to feedback, right? Because there is a difference there, right? Like, you can get so tunneled into the way something is, and then when you get someone's reaction to it, you're like, oh shit, you're right. You know, the legs are wrong. The eyes are wrong, right?
False dichotomy, bro.
The everything is wrong. Okay, go ahead, Daniel.
I have a third option, which is that this is a marketing ploy.
They intentionally did a bad Sonic.
All we have is the trailer, guys. Like, we haven't seen a full movie of a bad Sonic. How do we know that there's a bad Sonic? This sounds conspiratorial, but I'm at that point in my very cynical life, especially after listening to the Adam Carolla show where they had Christy Bishop on to talk about commercial stuff. And do you know the Discover commercials where they say, like, we treat you like you treat you? But it's never really clear if the two people are twins or if the two people are just two people who look similar. Is anyone familiar with this? This is a raging controversy in marketing.
What? Yes. I thought they were twins. I thought that was the whole conceit of the ad.
Uh-huh. They are not twins. They are purposely, and she talked to the casting director for this ad. They are purposely people who look almost identical who are not twins. And the reason is they want people to have this very conversation. They want the controversy of people arguing amongst themselves about if they're twins or not.
Wait, but it's the same. It's not like they cast different actors. It's the same actress.
Nope, they are different actors.
What? No, that's
the
same Indian girl.
Don't live on this planet anymore.
No, that's the same Indian girl.
Nope, they are different people.
Okay, their ad failed on me because I know the way movies work, and I figured they just shot one scene of the Indian girl saying one thing and then another scene of the Indian girl saying another thing and cut them together.
The casting director said they are purposely different people who look almost identical. So this is what I'm saying. My cynical marketing
brain. All I know
brain,
is they wasted money. They could have just casted the same person and nobody would have known the difference.
But the casting director would say, we're talking about it. So they didn't waste money. But this is my cynical marketing
brain. Fuck
you, casting
director.
I don't know if this trailer was ever meant to be liked by people. I think it created one of the biggest internet buzzes around a trailer in the past couple years and got everyone talking about the Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
This conversation inspires me to get They're Turning the Frogs Gay drop for just kinds of these kinds of conspiratorial thoughts.
And part of the reason I think
Futurama?
This is...
No, that's Alex Jones.
That's Alex Jones.
Oh,
part of the reason I think this is...
We might get kicked off of iTunes, though, if we do that.
There's no way they actually have time to redo the entirety of this character if the movie was going to come out in November.
That's true, 100%. That's what I'm saying.
So my point is, I think this was purposely meant to create controversy.
Okay, I see your argument, and I want to agree with it. I'm like 75% of the way there. But how do you explain the fact that the rest of the trailer is just as terrible as the design of Sonic?
Well, that,
is that intentional?
No, I think they're stupid. But
because the first poster was bad too, and everyone talks shit about it.
Yes.
So yeah, you think marketing strategy was they went in there and they're like, let's make this movie look shitty so people get angry about it.
Well, having an emotion about something is better than not having an emotion about something in the marketing world, even if that emotion is bad, because at least you have an association. And it's sort of like you can start at bad, and then if you get better, you'll actually get more points than you would have originally. Like, you get these, like, authenticity points that you wouldn't have gotten if you just had a mediocre trailer to begin with. So there's some strange psychology behind it. And maybe I'm violating my own sort of razor here. Not my razor. I forget whose it is, but which is don't ascribe to malice what can be explained by simple incompetence. But
Hanlon's,
I don't know.
Hanlon's razor.
Thank you. But I don't know. It seems pretty markety to me.
I mean,
especially because
they
already of
how quickly this?
How quickly they capitulated.
Didn't they already try this on Snakes on a Plane?
Maybe, I guess. Depends on what you mean by try and this.
Well, I mean, they made an intentionally bad movie and marketed it that way, and then the internet loved it, and then it made no money.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being too cynical here. Maybe it is just pure incompetence. But
I think that you're being cynical, but you're also not being cynical. And what I mean by that is, I think you're being cynical and you think that there's an ulterior motive, but I also think you're being benevolent and you're giving people more credit for competence than I think they actually have. So in a way, I'm being more cynical. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm being more cynical than you are, because I'm like, these people just fucking destroyed this.
Well, there's maybe some cynicism in our next story as well, when Zac Efron, who plays Ted Bundy in a new movie, says that white privilege is what allowed the serial killer to kill people for so long before being captured. Oh, Justin, I'm so sorry for you. I'm so sorry for your loss.
Yeah, I was like, man, I liked you, Zach. I was like, I thought we were going to be friends.
The 31-year-old Baywatch star plays Ted Bundy in a new film titled Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, and Vile, which tracks the life and crimes of the infamous murderer from the perspective of his girlfriend. Fox News caught up with Efron at the Tribeca Film Festival, where he discussed how he thinks Bundy got away with murder for so many years. Quote, this is Zach now. Ted Bundy is a vile, vile human being. There is no part of this at all. I can't express how much I loathe the man that this movie is about. He continues, the fact is that the movie really happened. The fact is the whole world, literally, all the media, everybody, was capable of believing that this guy was innocent. Talk about white privilege. Talk about white whatever. Every major topic in this movie is bent on showing how evil this person is. Interesting. Follow-up sentence to that. Okay. He also said in an interview on the Ellen DeGeneres show, Ted Bundy was a clean-cut white dude who just did not seem white person. So talk about white privilege, Efron said. What he got away with back then, nobody would be able to do today. It's a moment in time that came and passed, and it's truly scary, but it does not glamorize the killing. This is an important thing for me. This, of course, comes from backlash that the movie makes Ted Bundy look too good, too sexy, too interesting, too whatever. And so Zach is trying to push back against that. But what do you think of the theory here, Justin? Was Ted Bundy an effective serial killer because we just, as a culture, didn't want to believe that a white guy could kill people?
Okay, there is so much to unpack in this story that it is insane. Okay, the first thing I want to start with is the backlash against the movie. Then I want to talk about the Ted Bundy thing. Then I want to talk about what this actually reveals about white privilege. So there's just a lot to unpack here. The first thing is here. I saw the movie. So Daniel, I haven't seen Endgame, but I did see the end of Ted Bundy's game.
I do want to see it. So.
It's good. Look, it's a good movie. It's focused on, and this is what people are missing, right? You know, of course, I immediately read reviews, and I have this problem nowadays, which I'm sure everyone out there who listens knows. I have this problem, well, no matter what I think, the fucking opposite is the prevailing opinion. So I saw this movie, I was like, that's pretty good. And of course, I go online and I read these reviews, and they're like, this is a terrible movie, it misses the point, blah, blah, blah. No, fuckers, fuck you, you all missed the point of this fucking movie. You want to know why it glamorizes Ted Bundy? Daniel, take a wild guess why it glamorizes Ted Bundy. Why it sees
Ted Bundy's...
Because
from the perspective of his girlfriend?
Thank you! And the whole movie is about how she can't accept the fact that he's guilty. So, of course...
That seems obvious to me.
Right, but the problem is she's not in a lot of the movie because it's based on her memoir. And in the later parts of the movie where he, like, escapes, gets captured, escapes again, kills people in Florida, the reason she's not in it because she's just crying on her couch the whole time. Like, that's not interesting. You can't show that. But if you show how she is seeing it, that's interesting. It's interesting to put yourself in that mind state where she highlights certain things and she latches on to certain things to believe that he's innocent because she doesn't want to believe that she made that bad of a mistake falling in love with someone like that. So anyone who's critiquing this movie and being like, man, it makes Ted Bundy look innocent. Man, you missed the point of the movie. The point of the movie is there's a whole scene at the end. And this isn't a spoiler because, Daniel, in the first 9 seconds, you see when he is on death row and she goes to visit him. And the movie builds towards that moment. You know what? And I'm okay with that technique in this movie because it's a famous story. And we know what happens. We know he gets fried. So it's not like you're spoiling anything. Spoiler alert, Ted Bundy dies. He did it and he dies. Spoiler alert. But... No, and it builds towards that moment. And then that moment is a very emotionally powerful moment just to see both of them and the choices they're making in that moment. This is the rare movie that's like celebrated by Sundance that I would say is romantic. It's romantic in the sense that it's really portraying the choices behind how she decided to be with Ted Bundy and how Ted Bundy decided to act, all from her perspective. So people who are saying that miss the point. But then also, I think this is a perfect example of Zac Efron missing the point. He's so engulfed in this script and so not smart enough that he doesn't understand that he's taking that perspective and he's trying to explain it with white privilege. He's like stuck in the mindset. The guy who directed this movie, who wrote this movie, did the Ted Bundy tapes documentary. Why wasn't Zac Efron watching that as research? I don't understand. Daniel, answer this question for me, and maybe you're my age, so it's, you know, and William, you're a couple years older, so I don't know if anyone can answer this. Did anyone really believe Ted Bundy was innocent back then? I find that hard to believe.
No, I do think people thought Ted Bundy was innocent, but so people thought the Boston Marathon bomber was innocent. People don't believe that Osama bin Laden pulled off the 9/11 attacks. Like, there's going to be a percentage of people, and it's a shockingly not as small as you would hope percentage of people who believe these things, and they got covered by the media because it was a sensational thing.
Right, but Zac Efron's saying it like the majority of people believed he was innocent. I just don't buy that.
I don't buy it, but I don't know for sure in that particular case. I just know that every crazy person and their wrongdoings have some strange cadre of humans who want to defend them for some ungodly reason. And it has a lot to do sometimes with not white privilege, but attractiveness privilege. If you remember the marathon bomber had like teen girls who basically wrote to the judge saying like he can't be guilty because he's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's the attractiveness bubble from 30 Rock.
That's right. John Hamm can do no wrong.
If you told me John Hamm was a serial killer, I wouldn't believe you.
There you go.
That's no, right. I would believe it.
Hamm privilege.
But if you told me that, I would say, oh, which one is he playing in his next movie? No, here's the thing, right? So let's pivot into this white privilege point. Why did Ted Bundy get away with what he was getting away with? First of all, watch the documentary. That'll tell you a lot. But we're looking at Zac Efron is looking at Ted Bundy in that culture through the eyes of today. Yeah, it'd be a lot fucking harder to get away with what he's getting away with today, because presumably it would, all the news, everything would be everywhere. Presumably. I don't know though. I'm sure there's a lot of fucked up shit going on in this country, in this world, that we don't know about because people just, you know, don't post about it because they just think it's unimportant, because they'd rather talk about like what happened when they brought their little dog to the vet because it had yips and their cat was upset about it.
There's too many Avengers Endgame spoilers on the internet to search through and find the serial killers.
Right, exactly. 100%. Right? 100%. So, I mean, who knows? But that's the point, is he's looking at it through the lens of today, where they didn't have the same technology back then. It wasn't as easy for them to identify. And the communication wasn't... Look, everyone thinks communication was always this way, that everyone was always instantly connected to everything, and you could just call the next town over or IM them or text them and immediately be like, hey, have you heard of this guy with the yellow BMW who's murdering people? Oh, yeah, we have a guy with the yellow BMW. And you connect the dots really quickly. Like, they didn't do that back then. And not only did the communication suck, but this shows you the incompetency of law enforcement and government. We saw this, Daniel, with the Florida school shooting, remember? When they had, the FBI had this guy dead to rights. They had people called in and said, this guy's going to fucking kill people. And then he still fucking did it. They didn't stop him. So if in the year 2015, if they're that incompetent, imagine how incompetent they were back then. So now white privilege has become this catch-all term for when people can't understand why the world is fucked up.
White privilege is the devil, right? Right. Right. And I mean that in the backwoods church sense, as someone who grew up in a backwoods church, right? It's like, oh, well, that was the devil in you, right?
100%.
It's a way to externalize and demonize and control folks.
Right, 100%. And it's a
this
way
is
to
why
explain.
I pray not only the gay privilege, but the white male privilege away right before every episode.
because you don't want to be seen as by other people's evil. So anything other people don't like, they just go, oh, that's white privilege that did that. It's not even you did anything wrong if it's just something you don't like. I mean, we saw this with myself, right? Where I was, you know, I was upset because somebody just thought it was cool to just play their fucking music in front and loudly when other people were there. Oh, that's white privilege because I was acting in a way they didn't like. That's what it's become. It's just like you don't like the way the world is, so you just call it white privilege if white people do it. It's disturbing.
Did you have a stroke?
For what? Because I repeated it's.
So yeah, speaking of white privilege, I'm not sure. Instagram.
Well, I dominated that entire story, guys.
Well, you were on a roll, so we just let you go.
I had a lot to say about that one. I mean, Zac Efron, you let me down, man. You let me down. He's just still guilty because he felt like he used his white privilege with, wow, I can't remember her name right now. The Filipino girl from Sucker Punch.
I got nothing. I can't.
Vanessa Hudgens. He just still feels guilty about that he thought it was his white privilege. That's all.
Instagram is testing out a new feature where they actually hide the number of likes on your posts. Mm-hmm. On Tuesday, the Facebook-owned photo sharing app announced it's running a test in Canada, which hides the total number of likes on photos and videos. Likes, which are shown as hearts on the app, will be removed from the main feed, permalink pages, and profiles. While followers won't be able to see the total number of likes a post has received, the owner of the account still can. An Instagram spokesperson said, quote, "We are testing this because we want your followers to focus on the photos and videos you share, not how many likes you get." The news was announced at Facebook's annual developer conference, F8, in San Jose. The test is likely to elicit a range of reactions from anger to relief. Likes are often used as a metric of popularity. Some Instagram users feel pressure to rack up the likes or post photos curated for the social media age, such as its Instagrammable pop-ups or social media-friendly restaurants. Not getting enough likes can even affect some users' self-esteem. According to some studies, Instagram is the most detrimental social networking app for young people's mental health. Renee Englin, a psychology professor at Northwestern University, Renee Endgame, said, quote, "Likes are powerful because they are immediate feedback. In a way, likes give you the same kind of hit like a gambler gets from a slot machine. Justin, if they take your likes away, how will you know if people like you on Instagram?
First, they came for our something. Then they came for our something else. Then they came for our likes.
That's right. They can take away our alt-right leaders, but they'll never take away our likes.
They can take Pepe the Frog, but they will never take our likes.
I have a hot take on this. I think the problem on Instagram isn't the likes. It's the fact, just like Twitter, there's no dislike. And here's why. Look at YouTube. They've been de-emphasizing the dislike for a while. So this is I'm not talking about anything new. But the whole point of dislikes on YouTube, especially YouTube, is that if you look at the most disliked videos, they tend to be ones where sort of the community, the YouTube community, is calling out some sort of like corporatism or some really like cringy like content of some kind, or sort of like the whole audience saying no, right? But then even for individual creators on YouTube, the dislike is a great like feedback mechanism. If your videos like below 90% like to dislike ratio, you know that if you've said something controversial, or the quality is really low, or your facts are just completely wrong, right? And that dislike is a signal in the noise of everyone liking everything, right? Or people and it's also an alternative to the cesspool that is the YouTube comments section. I think the problem with Instagram is you only have likes, so people read the absence of likes as some sort of, you know, attack on their self-esteem, right? Like, oh, I didn't get that many likes. So I think without the other feedback of the dislike, that's why they're having all these problems with the like system in Instagram.
I think that's a good point. another thing I would add that I saw someone say before is just like a acknowledged button. So it's neither like or dislike. It's just sort of like acknowledged because you don't
Can
really
you make
have
it a
an
Star
opinion
Trek
on it.
Icon, a TNG icon of some kind. That's like one of those memes, right? Like saying, having all the characters say acknowledged.
Yeah, exactly. So you just put the TNG communicator on there and you click that for when you're just acknowledging a post. Because why do you have to have an opinion on everything? Why does it either have to be positive or you have to shut your mouth? And why does it have to be positive or negative? Sometimes you just want to be like, yeah, I read that. I saw that. I saw your post, and you want people to know that, you know, they worked hard on that and you took the time to look at it. I'm looking at my Instagram story right now and I have 3 people who have seen it. So if that doesn't hurt the self-esteem, I don't know what does. Daniel, you're one of them, by the way.
Oh, I was going to say, it depends on who those 3 people are. Come on now. If it was Zach
Snyder. Daniel, Elliot. Well, right. It's Daniel, Elliot, and my girlfriend's friend. Those are the 3 people who have looked at my Instagram story. So
I don't think I've opened Facebook or Instagram in months, literal months. In Facebook, it's been over 6 months. Instagram, probably 3 months.
Wait, are you saying my girlfriend is missing from that? I mean, she was standing next to me when I took the story. I would prefer her not to look at it and be there when I'm taking the picture.
I don't know. If you were a true millennial, you would be offended.
It's true.
I'm not offended. I'm not offended. No. I agree with everything you're saying, William, especially the corporatism part of it and the obvious shilling part of it. All this is doing is, you know, there's all this talk about Facebook recently and like they're going to silence all the conservative voices. This is a similar thing. All they're trying to do is kill the influencer economy. That's all they're trying to do. This influencer economy, which I think is shit, has popped up since then, right? Where like any girl who is a 6 or above, if you're not on there like hitting the boards really hard and getting free shit on Instagram, I don't know what the fuck is wrong with you. If I were a girl who were a 6 and above, I would just be on Instagram all the time posting things just to get free shit. And that's what Facebook is trying to kill, this influencer economy that's been created. And I don't know. It's like your platform has become what you don't like, so you're trying to fucking change it. Like, dude, this might even kill Instagram, won't it?
Well, one, it's just a little test, so it might go so poorly that they just abandon it.
That, and but, it's only in Canada, so.
Where they're very nice anyway.
Yeah.
They all just like everything anyway because of how nice they are, don't they?
Yeah, in Canada, they're introducing a sorry button.
And an A. A?
Yeah. I mean, look. From a marketer's perspective, again, it is difficult enough already to determine return on investment for a given post, for a given strategy, for whatever, especially a qualitative return on investment, that sometimes these quantitative metrics are useful, if not absolutely useful, sort of relativistically useful, and if not even relativistically useful, at least insights into algorithmic structures of these things, which we do not get from the companies themselves, and you sort of have to backwards create. So as long as the likes aren't going away on the marketer's end, I don't give a crap, honestly, if people like my stuff. My personal usage of social media is so much for a limited set of people that it doesn't matter to me anymore. My professional usage of social media is hyper-targeted toward people who it's not going to matter if the like button goes away. So, you know, power to you.
Instagram. I mean, apparently my personal uses of social media is for 3 people. So, and Daniel looks at my Daniel looks at my stories like once a week, maybe. So
now monetize.
He doesn't even, I text Daniel sometimes the things in my story and he still doesn't reply to the text.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you're a terrible influencer. You've not once changed Daniel's behavior.
What do you mean? I got him to do a podcast 7 years ago.
It's true. Look, I commit to one thing big. Everything else, forget it.
That's what she said. All right. Actually, Daniel, in our next segment, I have something that's going to appeal to you directly. So,
oh my.
Let's head into it.
Let me get my wallet out.
Well, no, it's not. It's going to dissuade you from taking your wallet out, actually.
Oh, okay.
Let's head into that in The Hope for Romantic with Jam.
Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people.
wasn't focused on.
As always, Midsiders, if you want to join into this conversation that we are having on the show and have it all week with us, you can join our Discord. You just go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. You click on any episode link and you can directly interact with us. And if you sign up for Patreon, you can get access to the exclusive Patreon only channel. But if you join just the general Discord, you'd see such great conversations like, William, you were posting all that great Star Trek content this week.
I know. I was on a roll. I don't know what was happening, but
it was Star great. Trek was on my brain. I enjoyed it. Yeah. And something I wanted to ask you is, are you aware of the Deep Space Nine documentary that's coming out soon?
No. When you mentioned it, that was the first I've heard of it. So
it's one of those Fathom events. So I didn't know if you were interested in seeing it or not.
Yeah. You know? We should definitely go see that.
So we'll see. Maybe we'll get a review of that in a later episode. But this is the kind of content you get on the Discord. So go on there, join us. We want to hear from you. It makes the show better. You've heard in past episodes how Midsiders have used Discord to make the show better. And you'll see that in the Life on the Midside segment as well. For the review this week, I saw lots of stuff, but we already talked about the Ted Bundy movie. For the review, I specifically want to talk about the movie Long Shot. Long Shot is the movie about Seth Rogen as a journalist who is like really schlubby. He's, you know, he's the typical Seth Rogen character, and the secretary of William, you can't distract me like that. He literally just posted in the Discord about Game of Thrones episode 3 in a YouTube video talking about how to fix it. So we're just
them.
Like
two of them.
Two of them. So immediately my brain's like, what? Rather than my review. You can't do that to me, William.
You're not supposed to have the general channel open. You're supposed to have the show prep channel open.
I don't know. Discord gives me all the notifications. There are too many notifications in the world for me to figure out how to turn all of them off.
Plugging Discord, not criticizing it. Come on now. Terrible marketing.
Well, I'm doing both.
Good pod.
I thought it was entertaining. Okay, maybe it's me, but if I were not me and I heard me just going off about inane things, I would think it would be funny. Because I would be like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? Like, he's just, I want to hear about this movie. Why is he ranting about the Discord notification? But I mean, I like Bill Burr too much, I think. So that's probably what it is. Anyway, so he's playing his typical, Seth Rogen's playing his typical schlubby self. And he gets the Secretary of State to fall in love with him as she's about to launch his political campaign. And hilarity ensues. So there are two ways I want to talk about this movie. The first way is I just want to talk about this sort of thematically and what's it about. And the second is I want to talk about the politics of it, because there are two levels to watch this movie on. So the first level to watch it on is the theme. And unfortunately, I think, Daniel, you might have guessed this when we watched the trailer. What did you say about this movie when we watched the trailer?
I have no idea. I know that's horrible, Pa, but I honestly cannot. I've been trying to think about what this movie even looks like in my head, and I can't.
Remember, this is the one where they do the reverse Pretty Woman with Seth Rogen?
Kind of. He falls down the stairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's always dressed in a windbreaker the entire movie. Oh, I think
podcast
you said
amnesia.
Yeah, you said something like, you know, it's really about like women power or something like that. I think that's something we all agreed upon. And they reference the reverse Pretty Woman thing, where at one point he puts on a song on his iPod, and they're like dancing in the back of like an event in like the galley, where, you know, the food is cooked. They go run there to have a moment together, and it's from the Pretty Woman soundtrack. So they played with that. That might have even been the song that became like the musical theme of the movie. You know, Must Have Been Love, But It's Over Now. Is that from Pretty Woman?
I have no idea.
I've seen Pretty Woman, but I was so young. So it, unfortunately, that's what the movie is all about. It's, the best way to describe this movie is it is a beta male's fantasy. And I'm going to spoil it right now. No,
there's
drop.
There's a horse
okay.
in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
There we go. Okay. I'm going to spoil it because there's no better way to describe this movie as a beta male's fantasy than the end. So at the end of the movie, she becomes president And this is the falling action, right? Or this is the resolution. This isn't even the falling action. This is after the resolution. This is sort of the, you know, what the new world is like, how the world is like now that they've fallen in love. She's the president and they're doing a short interview from the Oval Office. And he literally says, and I'm not even making this up, he said, I thought the way I was going to change the world was to be a journalist. But I realized that the best way I can change the world is by supporting her and learning from her. Look, I get the fact that she's the president and you're not. But how can that relationship even work when he doesn't have his own interests? He doesn't have his own career. He doesn't have his own values that he's pursuing to be productive. It's just his entire world is supporting her and learning from her. Isn't that what the feminists want in this day and age, the modern day feminists? Isn't that what these anti-toxic masculine people want? They want these beta males. This is what they want men to be like, and this is their ideal relationship. Am I wrong on that, Daniel?
Seems to be, at least in some quarters. I don't know. Let's play devil's advocate with you for a moment and say, isn't this what happens to women in a bunch of movies? Don't they give up all of their worldly pursuits and purposes in order to back up their man? What say you on that? Huh? Gotcha.
I would say that's just as shitty, and I would hate that movie just as much.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
you're wildly consistent.
Yeah. I mean, that's the same problem, right? I would be like, why would any guy want to be with that girl, right? Why would he want to be with that woman? That doesn't make any sense. And it's the same thing here. It's just that the only thing, like, this is where the politics comes into it, okay? The thing that's problematic about this movie, and I use that word very ironically, intentionally, is he is portrayed as the strength of his characters, even though he's super beta, is that he's the only one with integrity, and he keeps her as a politician from having or from giving up her integrity. And that's what makes the movie difficult to watch on a political level, Daniel. This movie is so left-wing that it's gross. So this is what you're going to love, Daniel. This is the personal appeal to you. And I want to even see if you can guess this, because this is so funny. I was laughing in the theater and nobody knew why I was laughing. And I had to write this down to make sure I didn't forget it. So they're doing her research ahead of time for her campaign. And they're like, you just need an initiative to, you know, to get people out there talking about you and that you're actually doing something and you actually care about something. So the initiative is, of course, involved with what issue, Daniel? I'm talking
Green
to you.
New Deal?
Right. It's essentially the Green New Deal. It's essentially the Green New Deal, and it's called the Global Rehabilitation Initiative. So it's essentially the Green New Deal. But the nickname for it, Daniel, oh my God, dude.
This is becoming an episode of Rick and Morty. Yes, Justin? What? Justin, what? Tell me what, Justin? Justin, what is it, Justin?
The nickname they used for it was Bees, Trees, and Seas. I'm not making this up.
No one on the planet listening will understand this reference. And I'm not sure we should explain it. Ask us in the Patreon chat to explain it.
Oh my, can you believe that, Daniel? It's an environmentalist thing, and they called it Bees, Trees, and Seas.
Ask us in the Patreon chat to explain that to you, folks. It's a long story that involves graduate school and absurdity.
But that's what makes this movie even more absurd, that's a real thing that happened now. A real thing in this movie. So it's grossly left-wing in this movie. I mean, he starts out, he works for a leftist newspaper in Brooklyn, right? He's this typical Brooklyn guy. And then his newspaper is bought out by the Rupert Murdoch character, who then, you know, they tell him, oh, just toe the line so you can keep your job. And he quits his job and then he becomes a speechwriter. And then throughout the movie, they keep cutting back to, quote unquote, Fox News. And Fox News is just saying these really, really sexist things. Like, oh, man, do you want her finger on the button when, you know, it comes down to nuclear warfare? Do you want her finger on the button on her time of the month? And they're portraying Fox News in this way. Now, here's what makes the movie insane. There's one really, really good scene in the movie. Throughout the movie, Seth Rogen's best friend is played by Ice Cube's son. I was making sure it wasn't Ice-T's son, because that gets confusing, Ice-T versus Ice Cube. No, played by Ice. Okay. Ice Cube's son. So he's this, like, rich, and they say he's in finance. You don't really know exactly what he does. And at a certain point, Seth Rogen's character has to decide whether he wants to continue being in this relationship and, like, put on a different public image and let her compromise. So she already gives up the C's in her deal, and she gives a, they want her, you know, President Trump, they have Bob Odenkirk play a President Trump stand-in, wants her to give up the trees because of Rupert Murdoch's character. They, like, try to blackmail her, and she wants President Trump's endorsement, otherwise she won't be able to become president. So she wants to do that, and she wants him, Seth Rogen's character, to be with her and also change his public image. And he's like, I can't do that. You know, you want me to give up my integrity. But then he's talking to Ice Cube's son's character, who, by the way, is hilarious in the movie. And just out of nowhere in this scene, he's like, you know, your problem is you don't listen to people. You don't understand where other people are coming from. You don't want to hear them. You don't want to hear what they believe in because you just want to talk about what you believe in. And then he goes, did you know that I'm Republican? And then there's this whole scene where Seth Rogen is like, it's like a different movie. It's completely making fun of the leftist perspectives who can't understand how Republicans exist and how his best friend can be Republican. And it even takes the Republican side where the character is like, the reason I didn't tell you I was Republican is I knew you'd react like this, and I didn't want to not be your friend because of it. And it's a very good scene in a movie that's overall very super left wing, because if the movie is actually about how the two sides need to compromise and how they need to listen to each other and understand each other, then if you're going to satirize Fox News, you need to satirize MSNBC as well, or satirize CNN. You can't have all the media be good except this one goofy right wing media, or you just take all the media seriously. You make fun of all of it, or you make fun of none of it. You can't have a movie that's entirely left-wing and then have this one good scene and act like it fixes all of it. So overall, you should see this movie if you can look past the politics. I had a very hard time looking past the politics. I mean, it even got to the point that my girlfriend had a hard time looking past the politics, because literally, I think she finally got a view into how ignorant the left is. Where one of the scenes takes place in Manila, and Seth Rogen makes this joke, and he says, man, this country is beautiful. You wouldn't know that it almost is on the verge of civil war. And then it literally, there's bombings, and they're getting shot at in their hotel room. And she looks at me, and she goes, why the fuck are there bombings in the Philippines? This isn't what the Philippines are like. So that you can see how ignorant these people are about the rest of the world. You've got a Filipino sitting next to me seeing how poor this is. So I had a hard time looking past it because it's just so woefully anti-reality. To me, you know, comedy has to be rooted in some sort of reality. So I had a hard time looking past all that. If you can, you should see it, because there are some funny stuff. I mean, I thought Ice Cube's son was hilarious. I thought he was the funniest part of the movie. So there's some funny stuff in there. And don't see this movie if you can't look past the politics. So, Daniel, I will assume you are not going to be seeing this movie.
I will not be seeing this movie.
Which is unfortunate, because it's right in your wheelhouse.
It is. But, no.
All right, let's move on to Trailer Takedown now. As always, the trailers are posted on Saturday morning/afternoon. I realize I've been saying Saturday morning, and it depends on what time zone you're in. It's in the morning for me in the West Coast, but if you're on the East Coast, it's more on the afternoon for you. So they're always posted on themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. Just go there, and you can watch the trailers whenever you want. You can watch them over the weekend. You can watch them before the episode. You can watch them after the episode. You can watch them during the episode to enhance your listening experience.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Crawl is a horror movie set in Florida. There's a Category 5 hurricane, and a daughter and her father get trapped in their house, and there is a giant alligator coming after them. Okay. More movies need to be set in Florida. It's very clear that the stylization of this movie was influenced by Zack Snyder, and I appreciate that. It's like, okay, I know you people are all shallow and you don't understand what's going on with Snyder movies, but at least I like that his stylization has influenced other people. Also, alligators are the ones that don't attack people. It's crocodiles. I know it's set in Florida and there are alligators in Florida, but know the difference between alligators and crocodiles. All of that said, I'm going to see this movie. This is a hug for me.
Hug.
So here's what I'll say about this, which is that I was actually thoroughly entertained by the trailer.
Yes.
And that's a problem in the sense that I feel like I didn't need any more than that. This is not my genre of movie. It was very suspenseful, and it made me have that feeling that your heart gets clutched a little bit a couple times.
It was Jaws with an alligator.
It was Jaws with an alligator. I felt like, yeah, that's enough. I'm good. I'm content with that. I don't need to see 90 minutes of this or 72 minutes or whatever it is. So I'm not going to see this movie, not because it actually looks particularly bad, but because I got my fill. Tackle.
It's the greatest trailer ever. It's so good that it makes you not want to see the movie.
Yeah, felt like it. William?
I think they left a few chips on the table here. Why stop at Category 5? Make it a Category 6. Come on now.
But then the house wouldn't be standing to be trapped in it with the alligator crocodile.
Also, there was no ticking sound when the alligator was on screen. So this,
yes, I knew you were going to do the Peter Pan reference.
So much like Daniel, though, this doesn't look like a movie that I would normally go see. But there's nothing wrong with the trailer. And if you like horror, this looks like a popcorn horror flick. Although I will say this is the type of movie I would see with friends at home and make fun of it while we were watching it. So I guess technically that makes it a
Netflix and hug.
I do appreciate the fact that Peter Pan knows the difference. Disney knows the difference between a crocodile and an alligator. We can criticize Disney on a lot, but they know they're reptiles.
Second trailer.
Late Night is a movie written by Mindy Kaling and starring Mindy Kaling about a girl who has no experience but still becomes a writer for a late night talk show. This seems to be the latest in this Amazon studio push where maybe they're doing the Netflix model where they're like, let's do a bunch of movies written and starring by comedians. Whereas Netflix just does a bunch of stand-up specials. Amazon seems to be doing this. To me, this just looks like pandering to the typical feminist Me Too wave. There is nothing about this that was appealing to me. Hopefully you guys have more to say. I think this is terrible. I hate Mindy Kaling. Tackle.
Mindy Kaling is anti-funny. Like, she's not even a bad comedian. She's just anti-funny. So I think she's not funny on purpose.
If we took Mindy Kaling and we put her together with Bill Burr, do we get a warp drive?
You would. In fact, like, the world would just explode. I just can't stand her. She's atrocious. You know, where's Catherine Ryan's show, Amazon? Someone who's actually funny. Anyway, hard tackle.
Tackle?
Yeah, a comedy should make you laugh. And I know I have a high bar, but there was no giggles. And this is all social justice politics. I don't see what you could get out of this that isn't, you know, there's better stories to be told here about how a comedian, like someone breaking into a writer's room, which could be really funny and really entertaining, but no.
Tackle.
I mean, didn't 30 Rock do the writer's room better than this trailer did?
1,000,000,000,000,000%. Yes.
To Hollywood, stop it with this Me Too crap. Stop it. Stop it.
Third trailer.
Blinded by the Light is a movie about someone who becomes really obsessed with Bruce Springsteen, and it changes his life and makes his life better. Now, here's the thing. That description, and even the name of the trailer, it doesn't do it justice. Because I saw this, and I was like, oh, God, is this another one? Like, we had the Elton John one. We had the Beatles one. Remember the trailer for Yesterday, which also looks very good. We had the Queen one. And I was like, is this another movie like this? Are we really all the way down to Bruce Springsteen? And also, in the trailer, I'm really glad they made the Bob Dylan joke. Because that was the joke I was making. I was going to make that joke on the show. I was going to be like, well, why'd they pick Bruce Springsteen and not Bob Dylan? And I was like, are we really down to this? But then I watched the trailer. And oh my God, this trailer is wonderful. The romantic stylization of the way the lyrics are shown on the screen and it's affecting him and the way it affects his life and the actual conflicts between him and his family and the idea of, you know, he's trying to integrate into this culture but preserve his individuality and also the, you know, his immigrant family's culture is weighing down on him. It's just, it's also wonderfully done in the show. I mean, there are so many people who talk about, you know, Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman are immigrant movies. Watch this trailer and then go back and tell me those are immigrant movies. This gets it so much more. And the nice thing about this trailer is it portrays it as this is a journey, even though it's specifically about this guy being an immigrant. It's something that all of us can go through, especially who have had music speak to us in this way. And affect you emotionally in this way and developmentally. I thought this was a wonderful, wonderful trailer, and I'm very excited for this movie. I didn't think I would be, so well done to whoever executed this movie. This is a hug.
Hug.
Yeah, there's a great line in the trailer, something like his father, who's very traditional Indian father, says this.
Isn't he
musician.
Pakistani?
Yeah, Pakistani. Yeah.
Oh, missed that. Wasn't watching that closely, I guess.
Well, they wrote it. Somebody wrote it on the wall against him.
Yeah, and as a slur.
Did not see that. Okay, I'm lost. Oh, says this musician doesn't speak for our culture or something like that.
Our people.
Our people. And the kid replies, "Yeah, but he speaks to me."
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes.
Great line. Trailer looks awesome. Is this a Netflix movie? Do we know?
It's Warner Brothers, which yeah. Fucking ironic if you think about it.
A little bit.
WB, how can you release this and do what you did to Snyder? How?
I cannot see myself going to a theater to watch this only because it's just not. When I go to theater, the only reason I'm going to pay to go see something in a theater now is for spectacle. I know that's sad, but it really is like something. I need something to call me to. Go see it on a giant screen and pay $15.
I got something for you. Imagine the social justice points if you go with your Pakistani wife to this movie.
True. True. Still likely more a Netflix and hug.
Netflix and hug.
I think, though, Daniel, there is a value to... I know you're going to the theater for spectacle, and that's the argument is, you know, technology is so good that you're going to get a better experience at home, especially without having to deal with all the in-the-way people who are in the theater, right? I get that argument, but isn't there an argument for wanting to support these kind of movies?
Yeah. Maybe I'll buy it from Amazon at my house.
There you go. Okay.
Or something.
Fair enough.
Yeah, Justin, just like you, I was skeptical at first, but this looks a lot of fun. I think the acting, I know you didn't really mention that, but the acting looks good. And the even though I do not connect to Bruce Springsteen music, as someone who has connected to music, I can appreciate it on that level. So I want to see this movie.
Hug.
Yeah, and that's the other wonderful thing about it. I'm glad you said that is, you know, we connect more with, like, pop punk, Newfound Glory. I don't connect with Bruce Springsteen at all, but to see that romanticized, to see that dramatized is wonderful.
Yeah, I agree.
Final trailer.
Ophelia is a retelling of Hamlet from the perspective of Ophelia, starring Daisy Ridley. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop. Stop. Just stop. Stop it. Stop. 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 There's nothing entertaining about this. This was boring as fuck. It looks stupid. And it has all the same main characters. Look, it's like we're taking the Wicked model, right? Like, oh, let's retell the Wizard of Oz from the Wicked Witch of the West perspective. And we're crossing it with Me Too. And we're turning out shit because of it. Stop it. Stop. Stop. Stop it. And then you use Daisy Ridley, who has pissed off so many Star Wars fans for her Mary Sue-ness. And I know, oh my God, that's a controversial term nowadays. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Tackle.
Tackle.
I didn't think it looked as bad as Justin suggested. But I do think that this is Daisy Ridley simply trying to avoid what happened to Mark Hamill. So she's trying to get some major features here in between her Star Wars stuff so she can go on and have, you know, a career afterwards that doesn't involve playing the Joker in animated shows. So just watch Hamlet, any version. You don't need to see this. I don't know why. I'm not as angry about it as Justin is, but I do have a sort of like, what are we doing here, people? Tackle.
Stop it.
Tackle.
Stop it.
You know, I was trying to think of the name of this movie. It's an old movie from like, I think the 90s where they tell a story, to tell one of the Shakespeare stories from another direction.
Ten Things I Hate About You.
No. It's set in the same time as Shakespeare. It was
Hamlet 2?
But I don't remember the name. This is what I just said. And now you're quizzing me on the name.
No, I'm just being a jerk and referencing random readaptations or twists on Shakespeare.
Yeah, I think this looks terrible. Everything about this looks terrible, so I'm not even going to really add to the conversation here.
Tackle.
It's a good pod when you don't add to the conversation. It's a good pod.
Well, I was trying to look up the name of the movie I was going to reference, but it wasn't going to help because it's so old that no one's going to know it.
We all universally hugged the Pakistani movie.
Yeah, it's fucking Fiza's fault. Wait, am I not supposed to say her name on air?
No, I've said her name million okay. times on air.
I didn't know. Sorry. All right. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about that movie and we're talking about the way, you know, art has affected us and music has affected us, I think that's a perfect way to lead into the final segment this episode, Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. Yeah. So I got a new tattoo. I only mention this for two reasons, not just because I want to talk about anything I've gone through. But the first thing is the whole experience for it was interesting and hilarious. And also Midsider JP submitted a thought based upon that I thought we all could discuss. And it's about tattoos sort of conceptually in general.
Give us some background on your tattoos. Does this make number two, number three?
This is number two. I was wondering what you meant for background. It's like I was going to explain what the tattoo is. So the first one I got was like a year and a half ago, and I got Newfound Glory lyrics on my right bicep. I got "It's Your Own Life, Live It For Yourself." So it's sort of like always a reminder to myself, like, you know, that's how you live. It's your own life, live it for yourself. And I thought that was like a really important thing to get on me because Newfound Glory has really affected me positively. I love them. They're my favorite band. And, you know, that's a very, I mean, Daniel, you would say that's a very powerful statement, right? Powerful lyric.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. So that's why I got that. But that was just like randomly, I wanted a tattoo. It was a Christmas present for my girlfriend. She's like, oh, I'll pay for your tattoo. So I just went to a place like near her parents' house. And it was also, you know, it was hard for somebody to mess up. I found the font myself and I gave them it and they took that stencil and they used it. For this one, I knew for a long time, after I got the first one, I was like, okay, I'd like to get a Zack Snyder tattoo. You know, I thought about like getting the image of Rorschach's blood stain on the snow, but that would be like really difficult to do. So I was afraid of going to somebody who would completely screw that up. And I was waiting to figure out what to get. And then he renamed his production company the Stone Quarry, which is obviously a reference to the Fountainhead. And then if you look at it, it's just a very celebratory logo. I mean, what do you think of the logo of the Stone Quarry, Daniel?
What do I think of it? I think it's meant to be highly symbolic and representative of what his production company stands for and what he stands for. And I think the design is symmetrical and interesting and classic, with a nod to sort of romantic idealism. So I think it's for Zack Snyder, it is an all-encompassing, nearly perfect logo.
Yes, and to add to that more specifically, everything you said is correct. And to add to that more specifically, and part of the reason why I'm saying all this is going to set up the answer to JP when I give his comments. But specifically, I think it's meant to embody individualism. I really think it's supposed to be, if you look at it, it's like the hammer and saw or the hammer and nail or whatever that is. I really think the way that's designed is it's supposed to be a counterpoint to the hammer and sickle. What do you think?
I think that's, if not obvious, it's upon any second thought, it has to be true.
Yes. Like, and
it must be.
Right. And Midsider Michael has pointed out this wonderful statue that he loves called the Self-Made Man. And the Self-Made Man is chiseling himself out of rock using a hammer. And what is that tool you use with the hammer?
To
chisel. Okay. So it's probably a chisel. It's probably a hammer and a chisel. And I saw that and I was like, I have to get this. I have to get this because even if Zack Snyder, you know, contradicts this later on, which I seriously doubt he ever would, and even if he changes it later on, this is something that will be symbolic of me for my whole life, that it's what I believe in. I mean, you guys have heard the show with romanticism and everything. So I got it on my left bicep. But the story is even better because the lead singer of Newfound Glory does tattoos. And I emailed him. I was like, can you do this tattoo? And he said he would do the tattoo for me. And it turned out he does them down the street in Santa Ana. And I live in Anaheim. So I drove down there a couple Saturdays ago. And it was not yesterday, because we're recording this on a Sunday, but the Saturday before that. And I went there and I got the lead singer of Newfound Glory to do a Zack Snyder tattoo for me. And it's one of those life moments. And it just how cool the experience was. Like, I get to say that for my whole life. Like, so the tattoo has this extra meaning, right? And it especially has even more meaning because, William, you'll appreciate this. He's sitting there and he's doing this tattoo for me, and he starts singing Scotty Doesn't Know. Do you remember that song, William?
Yeah, yeah.
So the lead singer of Newfound Glory is singing Scotty Doesn't Know, one of the most iconic pop songs from the movie Eurotrip, while he's doing my tattoo. And he's like, who did that song? And, you know, his other guy is there, his friend, this guy Kelly is there, who's also straight edge. And when I came in there, he's like, he looks at the hammer and chisel and he goes, are you straight edge? And I was like, yeah. He goes, oh, that's a really cool tattoo. I go, oh, that looks straight edge too. He goes, yeah, like the hammer's a big straight edge thing. And I was like, wow, this has like extra meaning for me now. So I'm sitting there and they're asking, you know, him and Kelly are like, oh, who sang that? And I was like, Lustra. And they were like, oh, did they do anything else? I was like, yeah, they had like a couple albums and they put this song on both albums. And they started laughing. I was like, yeah, it's like when the Plain White Tees put Hey There Delilah on like three albums. And they started laughing at that too. And then they asked what movie it was in. I was like, Eurotrip. And they were like, is that the one with Tom Green? I was like, no, that was the first one. This is the second one by these people. So it was really cool. It was like I was completely in my element with these people. And then Jordan, the lead singer, also asked me, he goes, you know, what movies has Zack Snyder done? And I named them all, and I was like, have you seen any of them? He's like, yeah, I've seen all of them. He's like, I like them. And then he goes, you know, though, the theatrical cut of Batman versus Superman versus the Ultimate Edition, like, the Ultimate Edition was so much better. And I was like, I like you, guy. I like you so much. And I told him my experience. I go, yeah, I had a really interesting experience. And if you've heard our episode of the Snyder series, I explain this. I explained my emotional experience where I was like, yeah, you know, when I watched the theatrical cut versus, or when I watched the Ultimate Edition versus the theatrical cut, what part of me was really happy because this amazing piece of art existed and it was so good. But then also part of me was really angry that I ever had to watch the theatrical cut and that it existed. And he was like, yeah, I had the same experience. So it was just this really cool. I'm kind of like, you ever get the tingles sometimes, like when you hear really good art or something? I kind of have the tingles right now recounting it, because it's this really cool experience to have the lead singer of your favorite band be tattooing the logo for your favorite director's production company. And you're talking about everything that happened basically with Batman versus Superman, and you're on the same page about it. That's like one of those experiences that's really special. When you talk about what makes life amazing and really special, to me, that's what makes life amazing and special. And to have that experience and have that memory, I'm going to hold on to that for the rest of my life. And I'll remember it every time I look at the tattoo. And that gives me a lot of strength. It gives me a lot of spiritual fuel. There's, you know, about my own integrity and my own belief in art and my own belief in what I enjoy and what is right.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story. But how did you decide to get your first tattoo overall? How do you, this goes to the question from the Midsider, right? Like, how do you just decide that you're going to put something on you that's basically permanent?
So that's the question. And to sort of share JP's words, Midsider JP, to reinforce what you just asked, Daniel. For me, pulling the trigger on something so permanent would require a huge amount of thought and consideration. It would have to be something deeply meaningful. I'm curious if you have a similar thought process. If so, I'd be interested to hear your rationale. And that's essentially what you just asked, Daniel. And I think the first thing is, the reason I recounted the story first rather than lead with the question is I hope that the deeply meaningful elements of it are obvious based upon the story I just told, how much these tattoos mean to me. Now, how do you decide to get a tattoo in general? That's a really, really interesting question. For me, there's a couple things. If you notice, a lot of straight edge and a lot of punk people have tattoos. And what that is it's a lot about self-ownership. And for me, and this is actually something I told Jordan, because he was like, oh, this is your second tattoo. And he was sort of asking about it. And I told him, you know, I've talked about this before on the show. A few, like 3 years ago, I was, you know, 135 pounds. I was just super skinny. And now I'm like 160 and I've put on all this muscle mass. Now I feel like I totally own my body in a way I never did before. And as someone who loves art, and art is so important to me, as someone who loves romanticism and the way it's, you know, it's helped me. That's why I really love the Blinded by the Light trailer. Art has really helped me in that I have felt alone. I have felt disconnected from my family, from the culture around me. I mean, I grew up in blue state America. I'm clearly not a blue state person. That's not who I am psychologically. That's not who I am philosophically. And, you know, there are things with my family where my family's not a very emotional family. They're not very much there for each other emotionally. My parents were wonderful and provided for me materialistically, but a lot of my emotional support and my emotional conversations with myself were through music, and then later through movies and through television and through, when I was young, I was a very avid reader. And that's a lot of where I got these sort of spiritual fuel. So as someone who cares about art, using my body to make art myself and to make my body more artistic is where the desire to have a tattoo comes from. And also something I do is I look at the people that I really highly value and I see what they do. Part of the reason I decided to get in shape is, you know, Zack Snyder lifts. Tom Brady is in really good shape. I mean, Chad from Newfound Glory, who I identify more than with Jordan, although now knowing Jordan, I identify with him more than I did before. Chad from Newfound Glory is really into MMA. He's not in the greatest shape, but he, you know, he does that. I like professional wrestling. So all of these things told me to be more of a physical person. And if you look at Zack Snyder and you look at Chad and you look at professional wrestlers, they all sort of have that as well. You know, they go more with the tattoos. I mean, one of my favorite current wrestlers is Aleister Black, and he has very much the, you know, the punk mentality, and he listens to a lot of the more the hardcore punk, and he has a lot of tattoos. I would never go that far, but that was just something that it was like, you know what? I like that. I like that idea. I like the ownership of my body, and I like putting something on me that says, like, this is who I am, and this is what means something to me. Is that, does that sound like gibberish, or does that sound like thought through? Does that make sense? And what are your guys' thoughts on tattoos?
William, I'd like you to go first.
Oh, I hope to one day earn a tattoo for myself.
Earn is an interesting word.
Yeah. I think that like you were talking about the owning your body thing, and that's the important part for me. I would only get it if it was something similar where I really had felt a real desire to project something with my body like that, right? And so I guess I would say it's not off the table for me. No plans to. But I could definitely see myself getting one someday.
Oh, and to add on to what you're saying, it was really important to me that it was one I could see. I don't understand like people who get like a tattoo on their back, because that seems to be more for other people. I definitely did it more for myself. I mean, like in the Hannibal series, the Red Dragon has a really cool back tattoo, and that makes sense, you know, for that show. But I just don't see the point of getting a tattoo I personally could not see.
Yeah, makes sense. I've contemplated getting a tattoo, more so when I was younger and more so when my mother was trying to pay me to get one. Because she thought I was not rebellious enough in high school. So she initially wanted to pay me to dye my hair. I didn't want to do that. And then she wanted to pay me to get a tattoo.
Isn't that not rebellious then, if you're doing what your mom wants?
Yeah, it seemed overall silly to me in any number of ways, but I've contemplated it. I don't know what it would be in terms of what is meaningful like that to me. I mean, there's any number of candidates, I suppose, but I don't know the it's not the permanence of the thing that scares me. That's fine. It's actually the selection of the thing that keeps me from doing it. It's, I guess I approach this almost too platonically in the sense of like, well, what if I pick the quote unquote wrong thing? And then I have buyer's remorse, essentially. So actually there's a company now that has somehow been advertising to me in my social media feed because the internet is creepy, called Inkbox. If either of you heard of this, inkbox.com. No. Basically, they send you an ink patch of a tattoo and you can upload your own designs or whatever, and it lasts about 2 weeks. But it just will not come off in those 2 weeks. Like, you cannot get it off. You basically just have to wait for your skin to regenerate and shed the skin cells in order for it to come off. They call it semi-permanent tattoos. I've been contemplating that as an interesting way to see what I could live with. But even that, I don't know. So anyone who's considering it, you might check that out.
Right. And even before that, you know, that's sort of like maybe a second step. A first step is what I use is there's this app called Ink Hunter where you can upload your tattoo design and also take a picture of yourself, and you can place the artwork on yourself to see what it would look like. So you could maybe do Ink Hunter, the app, and then do Ink Box right after that if you're still not sure. So there are wonderful tools out there that can help you see ahead of time if it's something you would like to do. And I agree with you about the selection of it, Daniel, but that's why during my story I said, you know, it doesn't matter what happens from here on out. It doesn't matter if Zack Snyder contradicts it. It doesn't matter if he changes his production company logo. The logo as itself is meaningful to me, and it's perfect to me. So it will always mean that for me.
Yeah.
And I think that the permanence issue is interesting in that it's like, I know this is who I'm going to be. Nothing is going to ever have me change from this. You know, now if I get if I have a stroke or something and my brain gets rewired, I can't promise that doesn't happen. I mean, there are things that, you know, sometimes changes that are beyond our control. But ideally, I would continue to be this person for the rest of my life if nothing physically beyond my control happened. I'm not going to change my mind. I'm not going to not believe in these things anymore. This is who I am. So if this is who I am, the permanence doesn't bother me, because all I'm saying is I'm concretizing who I am abstractly. And as someone who believes strongly in mind and body, that's important.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to think about it, certainly.
All right, any last thoughts on this? It's interesting. It's actually very interesting to hear from both of you that you've both considered it. I like the word earning, William. And yeah. It's I would have thought more William would be likely because of the whole pop punk connection. But Daniel, it's really interesting to hear that, you know, both of you have considered getting a tattoo. I wonder if that's a Midside thing. I wonder.
Oh man, the Midside logo.
Oh, see, I thought you know what's weird to me, and maybe this is something we can delve into here, just very briefly. I think it's weirder to get a tattoo of my own logo than it is to get Zack Snyder's logo. Is that weird?
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't want to do something of my own either, I don't think. Not like that.
It doesn't feel self-interested. It feels oddly, to use another phrase that I hope has the meaning I'm trying to connote, self-aggrandizing.
Yeah.
You know, you may be great. You may be grand. But are you grand enough to make your body a billboard for your things? Seems, I don't know. That there might be scenarios in which that is self-interested, but I'd have to really examine them.
Well, let me ask you, what if Zack Snyder got his own production logo? Or what if Tom Brady got the TB12 logo? The reason I say that is because we're talking about people who have accomplished things on a grand scale. So could it be a way of celebrating their accomplishments?
Ayn Rand getting an ASA on her arm or something.
I would be surprised that, if she didn't have that on her arm.
I guess she didn't come up with that, but I don't know. Maybe that's something to contemplate for the future. I'd have to really think about that. Even people who achieve things on that scale, it's still to me at least, and maybe this is a psychological thing about me, is strange to. Again, like, make an advertisement for your product on your body.
Yeah.
That seems, I don't know, fleeting's not the word, but I don't know. I'd have to really think about that. Especially the Snyder and Brady things are interesting examples.
Something to contemplate going forward. So maybe Midsiders, you out there have thoughts on what we were just saying. You can always share that on Discord, either in the general channel or the Patreon exclusive. And don't forget in the Patreon exclusive channel to ask about bees, trees, and seas. That's a really, really good story. All right, gentlemen, what did we learn this trip, William?
Well, I learned that all I have to do is go to Domino's and get some spoilers. I can finally get in that fist fight I've always wanted to get into. So I'm just going to shout Avengers spoilers until someone starts to fight me.
Have you seen Endgame?
No, I haven't seen the first one of this Avengers stuff. I stopped watching. I don't think I've seen any Avengers movies. I think I watched the very first Avengers movie. That's kind okay, of where well, me will... and Marvel parted ways.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, that's when Disney bought it, and that's when they started to change Tony Stark's character. But there will be interesting discussions to be had. Next episode, Midsiders, we will be talking about Endgame and Tony Stark and all of that. So look forward to that. Daniel?
I learned that the internet mob can have real consequences as long as the studio was intending to change the design anyway, because I'm cynical. Justin?
Similar. I learned from you just how... I even want to say manipulative. Is manipulative a good word that marketing totally, is totally. Nowadays? Yes. I didn't realize how manipulative marketing was nowadays. I feel defrauded with the Discover Card commercials. Is defrauded the right word? I'm using that ironically because it's a credit card. But I literally thought those were the same person. I thought you were going to say more. Yeah, I thought that was the same girl. Because you want to know what's funny? That one of those two girls, the Indian girl, is in another commercial later. How do I know which one it is? How is that fair to either of those? Which one's the better actress? Yeah, why? I don't understand why you would care. It just doesn't make a difference.
You are totally just because, again, their slogan is, "We treat you like you treat you," which makes you think that they're twins or even the same person, but no, they are absolutely different.
It should have been the same person. It should have been the same person.
Yes. Anyway, Midsiders, thanks for joining us on
this journey. No, also, I want to say one more thing. It's also scary that they can find someone who looks that much like you that I would get confused to think you're the same person.
Yes.
That's terrifying.
Oh, it's frightening. You have a doppelganger out there, Justin.
Oh, my doppelganger
is
Bradley
James. Mads. Oh, sorry.
Well, Mads Mikkelsen, Bradley James. Also, while we're talking about this, did you see the picture Tom Brady posted of himself, like, running, and it was, like, a faraway picture? On Instagram?
No.
Oh, well, the funny thing is, like, when I first looked at that picture and I was scrolling through my Instagram, I was like, wait, what's this picture of me? And then I zoomed in, I was like, oh, that's not me. And I go, okay, I was like, I've crossed the threshold now. I am such a narcissist, I thought Tom Brady looked like me. But then my girlfriend, Christine, was like, hey, did you see that picture of Tom Brady that looks like you? And I was like, okay, I'm not that crazy. So I did one more test and I took a screenshot of the picture and I sent it to my mom and she goes, who is it? Is that a picture of you? Is that a picture of the actor who looks like you? And then she goes, never mind. I zoomed in and it's Tom Brady. So I'm not crazy, but I felt crazy for like a couple days until my girlfriend said that.
Well, if you want to see pictures of Justin and Tom Brady, they're on the internet. And so are we at The Midside everywhere, Instagram and wherever else social media is sold. You can also go to themidside.com/podcast, listen to all the previous episodes, /store to get your merch. Liberty.me syndicates us. Thanks. Subscribe on iTunes, if that's still a thing, and Google Play, and give us a 5-star review. Patreon.com/themidsize, where you can go to give us a couple bucks every time we produce one of these shows. Helps us keep the lights on. But really, the thing that we most want you to do, and we mean this in all sincerity, is tell a friend about the show. That way, your friends know about the show, and we can keep this thing rolling. Until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin Elmoznesky reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a...
It could be that I haven't seen you in person in a while, but to me, this looks nothing like you.
Well, he has the same exact haircut as me, too. I texted him the picture, if anyone's wondering.
Even
I have that same exact haircut.
Like, all the way...
Oh, I heard I texted him the picture. I thought you meant you texted Tom Brady the picture.
Yeah, if I had Tom Brady's number, you think that's the first time you'd be hearing about this?
We'd be hearing about you in a court of law. Yeah. Tom Brady's phone number.